much, and so it's really a pleasure to be here. Thanks a lot. So, okay, I should say this talk is the result of an attempt to understand certain models which we have in field theory and which involve locomotivity as real locomotive geometry in the sense which we heard in many talks here. So I should say this, okay, this is joint with Harald Grosse, and it's work in progress. Not everything is finished. In particular, there is a preprint, quite old yet, which is to a large extent wrong, but the idea which we developed there was essential for everything which then works in the right direction. So, okay, here is the model which we found to be quite remarkable. So it's a scalar field theory, four-dimensional space, which is important. So interaction, so this is an interaction term which involves the modal product, and most of the importance is in this part in green, which is plays the role of a Hamiltonian of the models, which is Laplace plus harmonic oscillator potential. And so with this particular model, we found to be renormalizable as foreign power here is a lambda, which means that this defines a perturbative conflict theory, which, okay, is a nice result, but a much more important result is that this model, if this parameter omega is put to a special value, 1, then it turns out that the beta function vanishes. It's maybe not important what this means, but the consequence is that one believes that this model exists non-perturbatively. And this is quite exceptional. So up to now, there is not a single model in four dimensions which really is proven to, a non-trivial, interacting field theory which exists as a non-perturbative conflict theory. A candidate which everybody believes to be, to exist, is a non-abelian gauge theory, which of course is also a non-permittive field theory, but this is much too hard to prove. So there's not much hope to achieve the proof, whereas this model is very simple. And therefore, we are much interested, especially the group around Vincent Rousseau, is much interested in studying this model and to understand why these particular properties appear there. And so my motivation is then to look at these type of models, in particular with this part in green, from point of view of non-commutative manifolds, to understand what's going on, why there is something behind which we don't understand yet. So first some point of introduction. Maybe I should not insist so much on what spin. So these non-commutative manifolds were suggested by Alain in 96. And so I hope I'm right to say that the standard model played a crucial role to find this set of structure. And then as we heard yesterday and also today and following this distinct lecture, the conditional case is understood now. For physics, the most important property is that these equivalence classes of spectral triples, they automatically describe Young-Mills theory and gravity. So in particular, there's an action principle, the spectral action principle, which gives the action of Young-Mills coupled to gravity, and this is the starting point for quantum field theory. So it's an action function, and then we can do quantum field theory. And what is also remarkable is that in quantum field theory one computes Feynman graphs, and most of them are problematic. So in models which arise from this approach, at least some graphs are renormalizable, which means they are good by construction. So therefore, once one has a spectral triple, then one is in a very good situation concerning quantum field theory. So okay, we had this modal space in the beginning, and in fact, in papers many authors of the Marseille-Costa Rica collaboration, they showed that modal in the ordinary sense is non-convex expected triple. And then, okay, the procedure is the usual one, so one looks for the spectral action. This was also computed and was shown to agree with ordinary Young Mills theory, where everything to the product there is the model product. But there's a problem. Namely, so this is a non-contact space, and the spectral action does not exist in such a space. So they had to introduce some regularization, which is quite artificial. So, and okay, this problem will be solved in the model I have. So we have this oscillator potential, which we need for other reasons, namely for regularization. So the question is now, okay, this is the problem, find a spectral triple where, okay, I should say this harmonic oscillator which we have as a Hamiltonian, which is somehow the square of some Dirac operator to find. So, and so we have to find a spectral triple around such a hypothetical Dirac operator with the spectrum identical to, or more or less, at least asymptotically identical to the harmonic oscillator. And so we tried many years ago, and this did not work because we had this list of axioms, and there are many dimensions in non-convex geometry. There's the metric dimension, there's KO dimensions, and originally they were believed to agree, and in this rigid setting it was not possible to have a spectral triple. And then there are examples are important, of course, and then there were examples, for instance, Polish quadrosphere and the recent version of the standard model where KO and metric dimensions are required to be different, which, is important. And then in this more liberate setting, it is indeed possible to find a spectral triple which includes this model which we are interested in. So this is the context of the talk. So, this is a certain list of axioms. I should say these are proposed in this paper by Geral and co-authors, slightly adapted here to the situation. I should say they are proposed by analogy with the compact case. So, could one do with this? Of course, it's a natural procedure, but it's probably not the final word on the subject. Okay, this is the situation. So we have to modify a little bit the compact case. So, important is A, which is the algebra, this has to be non-unitary because we are in a compact situation. This is important. But we need also, for instance, C will be the Hochschild cycle, representing Hilbert space squares to 1. So we need somehow to have a unit somewhere. And this is the algebra B, which is the unitization. Well, in all of these examples, B is more or less fixed. So it should be seen as the regular elements of the bicommutate of A. So it's not a new ingredient, it comes out. So usually J is the real structure and chi is the two grading, which is usually coming from the Hochschild cycle, but this is not the case in this type of models because, as I said, the KO dimension is something different. It is not related to the metric dimension which comes with the Hochschild cycle. So therefore, this has to be a different ingredient. So everything else is more or less the same, and now set of axioms. So usually one requires the resolvent of the Dirac operator to be compact. This has to be relaxed in general, but I should say in the model I have, I can skip pi of A. So D in the model I have has compact resolvent. And this is absolutely crucial for computing the spectral action, where we need to really that D itself has a compact resolvent. But I put it here in order to include the R4, for instance. So regularity is the same. So I should say I also use this nice operator D squared plus 1 and the square root, which we had this morning by John Phillips, because in the examples D has a kernel, and then this is easier to work with. So then everything is more or less the same. So there's very important operator theta functions. So, okay. Yeah, okay, I come then in example to this, to precise properties and construction. So which then defines the dimensional spectrum. This plays a crucial role. And I should say this, in verification of the axioms, this is the hardest part, the computation of the dimensional spectrum. Everything else is more or less automatic. But here, really, to compute the dimensional spectrum, one has to work. Okay, then I define metric dimension as the supreme of the real part of the dimensional spectrum. And then for this particular value of dimensional spectrum, the Dix-Mead trace is, okay, is considered. Okay, this gives metric dimension, then finiteness is, more or less this. Okay, there's certain points which are different, of course, so in order to define the projector, of course, we have to consider it in the unitary algebra, and the smooth or regular part of the Hilbert space has to be then a finitely general projective module which mixes so the non-unit part and projector in the unitary one. I should say this is already simplified in this model I consider in the RN case, and in the original Moyal model, this is much more complicated. Then there's a third algebra appearing, because in the model I have, so A will be somehow the Schwarz functions, and so the Hilbert space I have will be Schwarz, whereas in the usual case this is smooth and which is somehow in between this A and B. But here this is much more simple, and so therefore I just consider this case. And okay, this compatibility between scalar product and Hermitian structure Dixmead trace is shown here. So reality, okay, this is just copied from the usual case. Okay, this is completely apart from the metric situation in the model I have, so I will not discuss it in detail. So then there's orientability, which is also quite interesting. So this is the usual. Okay, we have to define the Hochschild cycle in the big algebra B, in the unitary one, because this has to square to 1, the representation on the Hilbert space. And then this, the image of the Hochschild cycle defines the volume form now on the small non-unitary algebra A in this sense. So, and here it's important in the example that this is different from the Z2 grading. So if I insert here the Z2 grading gamma, then this is identically zero, which of course is a cycle, but a Hochschild co-cycle, but a trivial one which we are not interested in. So, and here it's also important that one inserts elements of the little algebra, because otherwise one has problem with the dimension here. This will come. Okay, now the model considered as a constructing a spec triple. So the starting point is the one-dimensional harmonic oscillator, such a Hamiltonian, which is the Hamiltonian of the corresponding Schrödinger equation. So the eigenvalues of H inverse are well known. These are the famous, so for H is the famous equidistant spacing. So, and okay. Eigenvalues of H minus 1 are then of order 1 over n, but H inverse should be seen as the square of some Dirac operator to find, and therefore we find the eigenvalues of d minus 2 of order 1 over n, and this seems to suggest that the triple is, one could think that the triple is in dimension 2 for the one-dimensional harmonic oscillator. this is in some sense would be correct for the compact case, but we are in the non-compact situation, and there the dimension drops down to 1. This will come. But okay, the 2 gives the right intuition to look for a Dirac operator in 2 Clifford dimensions. And there it's completely trivial to find one, namely this one. And so in quantum mechanics, these particular operators have play a prominent role. These are the famous creation and annihilation operators of the harmonic oscillator, the commutator of which is 1. These are the ladder operators from which everything is constructed algebraically for the harmonic oscillator. So, okay, this is a very nice Dirac operator, and this I would like to generalize to the d-dimension case. Okay, this is also straightforward. So there one has to introduce the bosonic creation annihilation operators, which are the A's, and the fermionic ones, which are the green, and they fulfill the canonical anti-commutation relations. And then the Dirac operator is just given by the tensor product, and which has a quite interesting property, namely it's supersymmetric. I have no idea what this means. Particularly, the whole model is not supersymmetric, so the algebra and the relation destroy it. But the operator is for some reasons which we don't understand yet. So, which means for every fermion which is created, a boson is destroyed, and vice versa. So then, if one inserts for A this previous, if this A in terms of derivative and multiplication, then splits a little bit, and then one sees that the sum and the I times the difference of the B operators appears, and they form a Clifford algebra of twice the dimension. This explains why in some places there's a double dimension appearing. So Hilbert space is the tensor product of bosonic and fermionic Hilbert spaces. Quite usual, the Z2 grading is obtained from the, in one possibility to see it as the product of all these 2D gamma matrices, or it can be seen here as the commutator of the generators B. So very interesting is the square of the Dirac operator, which will then generalize the Laplacian. There one sees that it's the sum of the bosonic Hamiltonian, which is the usual one, which has this nice equidistant spacing, also of the harmonic oscillator. And then the fermionic harmonic oscillator is the spin matrix. So for the fermions, this is the commutator, and this is given the spin. So and here this is the harmonic oscillator. Yes. And this is quite important because bosonic piece has a zero energy, but non-vanishing zero energy, so that bosonic model is fine, but here the fermion piece has both signs in angles, and therefore D will have a kernel, which is not the case if one only considers the bosonic part, which is the kernel will be one dimensional. So okay, now the whole set of data, so the operator is the one which we had before, this particular, so I should say now the frequency is called capital omega, and so there's a shift of the theta matrix from the, between the frequency and the positions. So, and okay, the square is the harmonic oscillator plus spin. Hilbert space as before, the algebra is Schwarz class functions, which is important, non-unital, with a Mollier product, and it acts on the Hilbert space just by component-wise star multiplication. So B here is put in, but this can be computed. This is given by smooth bound functions where all derivatives are bounded. But this can be extracted from regularity together with the algebra. So the two gradings given by the gamma 9 matrix, product of all the other gamma matrices, restructure is relatively trivial. I will say something on this. And the rotation form is very different. So it's, you see already here that this is, will be related to a 4-cycle and not a 8-cycle. So there's no way to obtain the gamma 9 matrix as an image of of these differential forms. So okay, now we have to check all the axioms. So the first important piece is that so we have here a multiplication. So the operator contains usual derivatives and multiplication, and under the model product, the commutator of the multiplication operator also gives a derivative. So therefore, the commutator of Dirac with the algebra is just ordinary derivatives, and so if we take here smooth functions, then we are done. So this is the remark which is very important, that D has the compact resolvent, which is absolutely necessary to define spectral action. So therefore, the whole construction of spectral action will go through for this model. So okay, regularity, this is the hard part to work out. The key is, as always, that the commutator of B square with algebra then is a first order operator, and then it's stable under repeated commutators. And then, okay, using then functional calculus, this is completely the same as usual. One finds that arbitrary powers of the delta operator are bounded. So now for the dimension spectrum, which is the hardest part to work out. So first thing is dt minus z is trace class if the real part of z is bigger than twice the dimension. So we are interested in four dimensions, so if real part of z is bigger than 8, then dt minus z is trace class. So therefore this trace exists at least for z large enough. So alpha is an element of this space of order zero pseudo differential operators defined in this way, in the usual way. And then, so the trace will exist for set real parts that large enough, and then we ask for the analytical continuation. So, and this is, okay, one has to compute it. And it's possible to compute just because the integral kernel for the resolvent of the Dirac operator square. Is known to be the Mähler kernel. So one has an explicit formula for everything. So, okay, this is the heat kernel, and the heat kernel is known for this particular model, given by the Mähler kernel, which involves then hyperbolic tangents and cotangents. So I should say the ordinary heat kernel for Laplace operator appears in limit omega to zero, then so the tangent disappears. Here this goes to one, and then prefactor also will be okay, just a constant, and then one obtains the heat kernel of the Laplace operator in the limit. And the second ingredient is the integral kernel for Moyal multiplication. That's the result. So now one goes on. So we ask for the nth power of the delta operator. Okay, this can be now explicitly computed using the previous formula. I should go back using this formula here for the absolute value. And okay, a certain integration I already carried out, and then one finds that essentially given by the nth power of the adjoint action, so at h, h was the Hamiltonian, the nth power on this Moyal operator. And then left and right sandwiched with the Mähler operator, where the argument is relatively complicated functions. So now this the adjoint action can be worked out essentially because everything are just exponentials. There's no surprise. It's just it's repeated, and then there are certain prefactors which are polynomial. Okay, so now one can go on. This is the object in question. So we have a certain number of products of these delta of Moyle functions together with d2 minus z. Okay, then okay, we insert integral kernels so that we find that the result is given by concatenation of Mähler kernels, which are this one and the ones which are here in between these. Okay, these at h to the n. And okay, we have to complete the trace so that everything boils down to a concatenation of Mähler and Moyle kernel polynomials. And this is exactly the same as the Feynman graph. So the propagators are the Mähler kernels, where these tau parameters are extremely complicated functions of the S. And so one has to glue together from left and right two of these pieces. And then there's a mixture between the S from the left and the T from the right. And so this gives complicated functions, then there are difficult prefactors. But finally, there's a certain, everything glues together, a certain function tau, which is complicated, times H. So this is the Mähler kernel. And then the vertices are given by at H to some power applied to Moyle. So means computing the Mähler spectrum is absolutely the same as computing Feynman graphs. And this can be done because all integrals are Gaussian, so this is absolutely straightforward, but unfortunately extremely difficult. So here is the very simplest case. We have just one vertex. So there's one vertex and everything else is a propagator which closes. This is already quite complicated. So it's some final combinations of integrals parameterized by some degree Q. And then, okay, these. So here you have gamma of the half in the denominator together with these terms. This combines to gamma of z plus n half. And then from the Mähler kernels, there appears a possibly singular prefactor in T. Okay, and the Q lives in a certain interval given by the degree of the, so the n, this degree of the derivatives. Okay, so then one has to perform a Taylor expansion of some finite order to get, okay, if here this exponent is large enough, larger than the previous one, then everything will be irregular, so that some finite order Taylor expansion then suffice. And then, but there are certain singular terms in certain interval, and then if one carefully looks at everything, one finds that, the critical range is z plus n1 between 2 and minus 2q, so q can be negative as seen here. So for instance, if n is absent, n1 is absent, then there is q could be is minus 2, and then you can see here that z is could be 2 and 4 in this case. So okay, final result is that this is a critical region, n1 minus 2q less than 4, where something can happen here in this case. All other terms are, or other poles are compensated by the gamma function downstairs. Then finally, one sees that this trace has its holomorphic extension to C minus 4 minus n. So from this one vertex graph, we find that the Mähler spectrum is at least bigger than 4 minus n. And what is extremely interesting is that the residues of all these here at the poles, are all local terms, which is quite remarkable. So, okay, this is this one point graph is just integral of some function. And then one goes on to the general case, so P is the number of vertices. So this is extremely complicated calculation. I should say, so far I have only done the case that the number of vertices is odd. 2 is fine, this is complicated and odd. The even case, there is an additional difficulty with so all these Gaussian integration, one has to be another, has to perform another Gaussian integration. Because there's some problem that a certain delta function appears in the Moyle product. So essentially, this has to do in four-point function. This, so one has these parallelograms, and then these are cut into two triangles, which and then there's delta function saying that everything is a parallelogram. So there's a geometric condition, and this is okay. One sees this in the model. That it's necessary to do another Gaussian integration, and therefore one has to control the determinants very carefully, and this is so far only established in the odd case, and this is work in progress, therefore it's not yet finished. So, but at least in the odd case, and I'm absolutely sure that it also will be the case for the even number of vertices, it's extremely interesting that all residues are local, meaning integrated Moyle products. And this, I think, is conceptually extremely important, because locality in the ordinary sense will not be possible in models describing, say, quantum gravity or whatever, because then we need to give up this traditional version of locality that interaction happened at the point. So, and this is a extremely important proposal, what to take as locality in field theory, which is constructed over more general spaces such as non-commutative one or maybe string theory, whatever, that these residues are the correct replacement for locality in physics. This being here that the counter terms from field theory, anomalies, for instance, so anomalies relate then to local index formula, for instance. So there's an extremely important relation between locality in quantum field theory and locality here as the residues. So something important is if one considers a true quantum field theory, which I will do then in spectral action in the next transparencies, there these delta derivatives, so they appear only in first order. So these vertices, there's only first order of at H, and therefore we only get finitely many residues. So here the spectrum goes down to minus infinity, but for quantum field theory there is only finitely many terms, because here for this Q parameter, here's a window. If n is 1 or 0, then there are not so many choices. So therefore, for true quantum field theory this is easier, because only finitely many pieces. But there one has to be much more careful for all these prefactors. So this one, there one has to extract all these correct integrals. But basically the computation of Feynman graph and the Riemann spectrum is absolutely the same. So okay, now the other parts, as I said, these are more or less automatic. So okay. The main spectrum was 4 minus n, so the supreme is 4, which is exactly the oscillator dimension, so this is good news. And then we get this trace theorem, so generalized into this model. So, okay, we know that the main spectrum is simple, therefore the Xmi trace can be expressed again as a residue, and then this integral is straightforward to perform. So, finiteness is quite interesting, because in this case the smooth spinners they are in fact Schwarzian, which is different from the case of the RN or the ordinary Moyal, where one really gets smooth, but here it's shortened because D contains the multiplication by X. Yes. And this is important because you see here, then the Hermitian structure gives again a Schwarzian function, and for them we have the trace theorem. If you have smooth, just smooth here, then one is in trouble at this point. So therefore, it is quite consistent to demand this, so this growth at infinity for the Dirac operator. So a reality, okay, this is quite interesting. One gets KO dimension zero always, independent of the metric dimension. So okay, first we, of course, we looked in four dimensions, and then we found that KO is 8, which is same as 4, and then we thought, okay, this is always twice the dimension, but that's not the case. Looking more closer at the relations, it turned out that KO is always 0. I have no idea what this means. It's completely separated from the metric part. The first order is also by construction. Orientability is interesting. So the big algebra B contains the plane waves, and then one takes the Hochschild-cycle of the non-commutators, meaning this one. Again, this is completely anti-symmetric in the last part. So the image under pi is shown here. And then this gives indeed the volume form on the little algebra A in this form. So, okay, defines cocycle, and here one obtains the usual exterior product of ordinary differentials together so with the Moyal product. Okay, this is more or less the setting of the model, and now it's okay, we are in the correct setting to compute the spectra action. So, and to make it more interesting, I consider already the case tensored with the famous Konlot two-point spectral triple. So it means we have this two-shaded version of the universe. The operator is then, okay, this diagonal part is the usual one, and then there's a mass matrix on the off-diagonal part together with the grading. So then one adds fluctuations, which means, okay, only inner fluctuations, so these one forms. Then the most general fluctuated Dirac operator has this particular form. So apart from D, from Dirac operator, there are two Young Mills fields, A and B, and a complex scalar field phi, which will be the Higgs field. So for that, one computes D square, which will then contain the usual pieces. So there's covariant derivatives of the Higgs field. There is already a prototype of the Higgs potential. And then on diagonal, there are the types of field strings for A and B, the H fields. So they really contain the usual Young-Mills curvature, but they have more pieces, namely the square of the connection, the Young-Mills field, and this strange piece, which is nothing but the commutator of H, the Hamiltonian with the functions. So this is delta of A. So this is what I said, that the vertices only first order, which is here, the term red, and zeroth order, the other ones appear in Feynman graphs. So okay, spectral action principle says that the bosonic action depends only on the spectrum of the Dirac operator. Then there are certain weight functions, which then give rise to non-commutative coupling constants, but there are only finitely many of them, as shown by Laplace transformation. So this is as usual. The new strategy is to split the square of the operator to the free part, which is the Hamiltonian, and something else, the rest, which is then considered as a potential. Okay, there's the usual iteration formula of Duhamel and others. So okay, and then one does the work. So Mählerkerne again shown here. Simplest geometry appears as the can be seen as a vacuum graph. Okay, it's just a trace of this of the Mähler kernel, and then trace means these two arguments are equal, so this part disappears, and then gives another Gaussian integral, and the tangent appears together with this prefactor. This one can be seen to give hyperbolic tangent to the power minus 4, and then this expansion. And what is extremely interesting is that the expansion starts with order minus 4, and if you remember the formula of the general asymptotic expansion that starts with minus half of the dimension, this means that the space considered as a compact space is 8-dimensional, which is in agreement with everything considered before. But the crucial is now that the spectral action is finite, which was not the case in the previous work on Moyal. So in this, at least in this type of spectral action, spectripods, which are non-compact, but somehow which have a finite volume, which means that the reservoir of these compact, then it is possible to extend the spectral action. So, now the more interesting parts. These are the kernels which I had before, and then one has to. It's that one of these operators, this corresponds to one loop Feynman graph. The result is then shown here. So, this starts at order t minus 1. As expected for a four-dimensional von Fried theory. And then what is extremely interesting is that there is another piece coming due to this omega, which is subleading order T0, but which also contributes to the expansion. And the sign of the order T minus 1 and T0 is different. And this is already an indication that this model will show some spontaneous symmetry breaking. There are signs due to this expansion here. This is a long calculation, but more or less the same spirit as computing the dimension spectrum. This result for the spectral action. So we have here the vacuum contribution. This is just the number. Right. Kinetic Kermix. This is ordinary Young-Mills for the A and B parts. Yeah, very good. It's positive, independent. It was negative in the previous work where we considered a bosonic model with effective actions. There we had a negative sign here, which is quite strange. Here everything is positive. It's the right sign. This is really the most interesting part. So if you put omega x to 0, then you have here precisely Higgs potential. So these are the weights of the characteristic function. So these are just constants. So usually this is the Higgs potential. And now this gets extended. So I should say capital X is something which in string theory is called covariant coordinates, which is so the gauge potential plus coordinate and transforms covariantly. So this is mixed together with the Higgs potential in such a unified potential. And this is something which is also up to the nature, I would say, because usually one has separated the continuous part of the geometry, which is Young-Mills, and then there's a discrete part, which is Higgs. And yes, yeah. Okay, so in the standard model, this term is not there, this capital X here downstairs. You only have Young-Mills, square of the covariant derivative of Higgs and Higgs potential without these capital X there. But in these models, one really knows what is discrete and what is continuous. So the Higgs potential is the discrete part, and there's spontaneous symmetry breaking, whereas in continuous part, there's nothing. Like spontaneous symmetry breaking. But in these more general models, it's natural to believe that this distinction between continuous and discrete part of geometry is no longer possible. So one cannot tell what is discrete, where the Higgs potential goes, and what is continuous. So therefore, one must expect that this spontaneous symmetry breaking also appears in the continuous part, which means in the Mills part. So this term, from this point of view, it is one has to expect that spontaneous symmetry breaking mixes Higgs and Young Mills. So some remarks here, as you already mentioned, the coefficient is always positive. Okay, these are the moments of the characteristic function. Maybe I should go back. No, these are here. Okay, it's maybe a presentation here you see. Okay. Maybe I should call the two grading gamma, and then. Okay. Here there's order chi one. So if the function is such that it starts horizontally, then this is absent. The other remark is it's gauge invariant. Well, gauge transformations are the unitary elements of the B algebra. And what is interesting is that this model is translation invariant if one considers this capital X as an entire object, because it's translation invariant. Here one has to pay attention, because it is not possible to write then this as a coordinate plus something, and then perform transformation, because then you cannot absorb the shift in Z to the A, because this changes the class of functions. So one has to consider this as an object, an entire object, without making the split, or not to change the class of functions. If one does, then everything is translation invariant. So, and now it's natural to consider the Euler-Lagrange equations, which are shown here. It's easy to derive them, but it's difficult to solve. There's something interesting which is very popular among people working on fuzzy spheres, that the solution somehow provides geometry out of nothing. So you have the model which gives rise then to these vacuum feed equations, and then you look for a solution. So if omega is equal to zero, then you see that you put the phi equal to a constant, namely eta, so that omega is zero, so that the right hand side here disappears. Phi is constant, then all these commutators disappear, so this is fine. And here upstairs, this part is absent, this as well. And then here you see that a solution is given by a constant commutator of the capital X operators. So here these X are considered as operators in Hilbert space, unbounded, certainly. And then a solution of the equation is given by constant commutator, which then corresponds to Royal. Whereas if we switch on this omega, then this becomes very complicated. And now there's, for instance, one can play around and make this from the omega, say, temperature dependent, and one then gets some phase transition, for instance, from if omega is big, from a geometry which is extremely complicated, where discrete and continuous parts are completely entangled. And then if, say, the universe cools down, temperature goes down, one reaches somehow omega to zero, where one gets either commutative model or this moral case, while some sort of phase transition. Unfortunately, so we would be very interested in really finding the vacuum solution, but these equations are so complicated that the only way seems to be to do numerical simulation. Otherwise, we were not able to find an analytical solution. Okay, then I stop here. Yes, okay, this is one of the improvements, and of course, so everything is straightforward. Once you have spectral, then there's no choice. So it must be these terms. Otherwise, you can imagine many other models. Okay, the question is, so here we only have one loop graph. So spectroscopy only deals with one loop graph. So one loop should be, everything should be fine. But there could be surprises in high loop order. What is always the case in that anomalies are only one loop effects. There's something called the non-randomization theorem. So, and this relates to the fact that here we only have these traces. Confit theory is something more general, I would say. And so, this is something I would like to understand, the relation between general confit theory and Feynman graphs of higher loop order and its place in computer geometry. No, this is unclear so far. One has to study this. Okay, this was in the purely scalar model. Here we have gauge theory. There is some sort of vector of this. Maybe I should. Okay, if you restrict somehow to this sector, you have here this is only Laplace, and here you have x square phi square, which is the oscillator potential, and then there's phi 4. So in certain sectors has probably measured beta function, but this is now coupled to Young-Mills, and there we have no idea. But as I said, so far we have no idea how to extract the ground state of this model.
It seems to be also already missing the gravity.
Yeah, okay, the Higgs is a gravitational part. Okay, I should say there's another proposal, which is due to Harald Steinacker, to interpret the U1 part. Okay, to do, okay, well, does everything this UN and interpret the U1 part of this as a gravitational field. And he gets at least certain degrees of the gravitational field as U1 part of Young-Mills.
Any other questions or comments? So let's thank Reimer again.